Welcome to a brand new episode of the Football Corner. My name is Vikram, and fresh from our studios at Sprout Box Surya Vilas, I have Mr. Bharat Kapoor sitting next to me. Bharat, say what's up to the good people.
What's up, people? I'm so excited about this episode. And I haven't seen your lovely face in a while, Vikramaditya Singh.
I know, man. It's been a while. And this is going to be a fun episode. City finally got beat. And we're going to be talking about that in detail, aren't we?
Lots and lots and lots of detail. Let's go for it.
Let's do it. But before we kick off, I'd like to take a moment to do a quick shout out to our sponsors, Maker's Box. If you're a creator or an inventor or just love doing hands-on DIY projects, you need to come check out this awesome makerspace at Sprout Box Surya Vilas, New Delhi. You can find out more on makersbox.in or in our show notes. Let's jump into it, Bharat.
So which game are we going to be talking about first, Vicky?
I don't know, man. Bournemouth had an interesting one.
True.
Everton had an interesting one.
No, not at all true.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the game. I think it was a match of the season, let alone the game week. So, yeah, City lost finally. It happened.
Every week we seem to be having a match of the season game. It's amazing. What an advert for the Premier League.
I mean, most of them have been games that decide second place, third place and all of that. I mean, this game also decides second place mostly above anything else, but City lost. And I don't know, I didn't see that coming.
I mean, I didn't see it coming, but I'm sure I've mentioned this enough times. If there's one team that's capable of turning Man City over, it's Liverpool.
That's true, man. I mean, I guess they're humans too. And a lot of teams going forward this season and whatever, going forward next season as well, will try to pick up a lot from what Liverpool did, particularly between like the 48th to the 75th minute, where they just had a maul session on City's defense. And they're going to take a lot of hope from that, right? So City's going to be playing in all the cup competitions. They have a lot of games to play before the season ends. And I think it's a good learning that Pep gets and a lot of other teams get about how to play City.
Well, we saw it in the League Cup where Bristol City did a pretty good job against City. They came away with a 2-1 loss and they play the second leg at home. But obviously, they don't have anywhere near the kind of quality that Liverpool possesses at the moment. It's the thrilling three that we're talking about, Mane, Firmino and Salah. Which reminds me, we've got Salah, na 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 na. Mane. Anyway, I'm done.
That one's nonstop. It's like everywhere, isn't it?
Dude,
speaking of, sorry to cut you off there, man, but I know Coutinho's gone. And it's like Fab Four's become whatever adjective, insert adjective here, three now. But
adjective starting with T.
Mike. Yeah. Do you think Oxlade-Chamberlain did enough to become part of a new Fab Four for Liverpool?
You sent me that image.
I actually made that myself. I'm so proud of it.
Really?
Yeah.
It was awful. I was like, who is this awful graphics editor?
Yeah, that was me. All me.
I think we have a long way to go till we even think about Oxlade-Chamberlain in the same breath as Coutinho. But this was definitely his best showing for Liverpool. Easily, by far. The stats back it up as well. He had more interceptions. He covered more ground and he was just everywhere. He was all over the place. But I can't just single him out for praise. I think the team and Jurgen Klopp especially deserve a lot of credit. They had a game plan and they stuck to it. It was that ferocious gegenpress that Borussia Dortmund were well known for and used extremely well against Pep's Bayern as well. And now Klopp becomes the manager with the most wins against Pep Guardiola. That's a pretty big feat.
That's five wins. No one's ever managed to do that or come close. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think gegenpressing was a big reason of... You could see it in the City players, right? I haven't seen these guys have such loose passing all across the board, right? Like even people who are as stable as like Fernandinho, for example, were just giving the ball away constantly. And it showed. And... one thing about Liverpool, which everyone's seen for this season, is especially is their attacking prowess. One player who I was really, really, really impressed by was Andy Robertson, man.
He had Sterling in his pocket whole game. The whole game he had Sterling in his pocket.
Killed it. He killed it from that left side. And like even when he was pressuring down by the end of the game, if you remember, he was down.
He pressed every player with the ball and pretty much.
He was in
City's left back spot.
City's left back spot. He was in City's box pressuring Edison. So
that was amazing.
I think he had a great, great game. And to nullify someone like Sterling, who, I mean, well, he had an awful game, but he was put under a lot of pressure, not just by the team, but also by the fans, because he was returning to Liverpool. And you could see his lack of experience, per se, come into play there and him not being able to do what he did. And if you notice, when he got subbed off, Guardiola actually hugged him and spoke to him for a good 5 seconds before he went to the bench, I'm assuming, which were like words of praise and being like, you know, don't worry about this. You got it. This is something that you have to go through to develop as a player and stuff like that. So it was just such a fun game. I don't remember the last time I laughed out loud while watching a game, right? And when that Firmino goal came, which was, oh my God, such a good goal.
Just to cut you off there, do you know Robbie Fowler, who's Robert Fowler, scored the exact same goal?
The Firmino goal?
Exactly the same goal. There's no difference between the two goals. I believe he scored it against United.
That's such a good goal, man. And the way he just pushed Stones off the ball and the presence of mind to play that touch. And Edison looked like a third class keeper, but he's not a third class keeper. He's a very, very good keeper. And how unsettled he looked throughout the entire game just goes to show how well Liverpool played. And even though they had like, what, 30% of possession by the end of it, it didn't show. And the only lacking part that I saw in Liverpool's game was them just letting go of the pressure by the end of it, allowing City to come back. I mean, they've been known not to put games away, and it's been a big issue with them throughout Klopp's tenure, at least. City almost pulled a draw out of the hat, but I mean, if you forget those last 15 minutes, Liverpool were flawless.
Pretty much. I think the gegenpress worked really well. Liverpool had a plan. They stuck to it. They were going to pressurize the Man City centre-backs because City love playing the ball out from defense. And 99% of teams let them have it because they don't want to lose their shape against City. Because if you lose your shape and City play through you, you're screwed. It's over. And Liverpool just were fearless. They pressed like animals. And it just showed. And as much as I'd like to praise Jurgen Klopp, I'm not happy about the two goals being conceded at the end. But at the same time, those two goals give some perspective on the fact that Liverpool do have a balance issue. It's not going away. A 4-1 would have glossed it over a lot and people would be like, oh, you know, title challengers next season, this and that. I don't believe that. Even at this point in time, you need a new keeper for sure. I mean, Karius near post, fine, it was a thunderbolt, but still near post.
Oh, the Sané goal?
The Sané goal. I was least impressed to say the least.
I agree. I mean, no matter how thunderous a shot it is, covering your near post is like keeper 101. Just talking about that Sané goal for a second, I know wind was a big factor in this game. It was in City's favor in the first half and Liverpool's in the second. But do you remember that ball Walker sent towards Sané? It was so good. It was so good. I mean,
I think it was made better by Gomez's lack of judgment. Let's be honest. Those crossfield balls by these...
But you can't blame Gomez here because of the wind as well. It's very easy to misjudge a ball like that, especially when the wind's in your favor. So if the wind wasn't a factor, Gomez probably had the right idea where it was going to land. But
I don't agree with you on that. He's a centre-back playing at right-back. That's one of the big reasons why that ball went right over his head. But as a defender, you're playing against City. Their passing, their precision is top class. And You wait for that ball to settle and come down rather than try and go attack him, because he just took a touch on his chest and he was away. And then Gomez got done in again when he tried to recover. He was completely wrong-footed. And then Sané got the shot in. So it was a bunch of individual errors. I think Matip could have done a little better as well. He got squared up completely by Sané. Not taking anything away from Sané. He's a really nice, quick player with really twinkle-toe feet. So I think the keeper is definitely an issue. Liverpool do miss Klein at right back as well. Gomez, Trent Alexander-Arnold filling in. It's fine. This season, it's a good development for those guys. But two things that definitely might have changed the outcome of this game. One, David Silva playing. He was a huge miss. I reiterate, and people can hate on me all they want, he's been City's best player since he's arrived at that club. KDB may be hogging the headlines, Aguero may be scoring the goals, Jesus may be, you know, sacrificing himself for the team, but David Silva makes that team tick. If there's anybody who can play through a ferocious press, it's David Silva. So he was one of the huge reasons, and no disrespect to Gundogan, who's a good player, nowhere near the class of David Silva. And the second was, I actually read this and heard this as well, that because of Dortmund's ferocious press, Pep once actually tried to bypass that press by playing long and actually had Mandzukic up front and maybe even played Javi Martinez right behind him just so that he could have that aerial presence in his attacking third. I think once in a while, as much as Pep has his philosophy and he's proven everybody wrong that it can be done in the Prem with this philosophy, he could have played or told his team to play a little more sort of suited to the way Liverpool were going to play. Because he knows Klopp really well. Klopp was going to press the hell out of him. He should have just gone a little long, tried something different. So I think Pep might have missed a trick there. In saying that, even though they've been reeled back by 3 points, they're still going to win the title at a canter.
That's obviously, and coming back to your point about Silva, Silva versus Gundogan is a no-brainer. About your point about playing long, he also needs to have the players up front to be able to do that, right? If it's Jesus is not a factor in this game, so it's Aguero, Sterling, and Sané, and they're not the tallest players, and they have a different skill set, which is running with the ball at the defense. So I think he played with what he had. He didn't have much of a choice there, and Aguero was completely nullified in this game, as was Fernandinho as well. And I give a lot of credit to Emre Can for that. Emre Can and Andy Robertson were the unsung heroes of this result, according to me. Obviously, the attack prowess for Liverpool is for all to see, and all the three, Fab Three, got on the score sheet with tremendous goals, individual tremendous goals. But without Can and Robertson doing what they did, I mean, Dejan Lovren started the game, and you couldn't tell that he was on the field, because he never got involved in anything. He didn't need to. Can and Robertson just taking care of that left side, Can taking care of that central defense. It was an exceptional display from all of them. And Jurgen Klopp's team, Liverpool being so good attacking-wise, it's easy to give them flack if they mess up defensively, which they have been doing, hence VVD coming in. But in this game, the way they set up and the way the responsibilities were dispersed for Can specifically, I think Klopp masterminded this to the hilt, man. It's a massive job.
Totally. And I really, really rate Can very, very highly. He can be a little poor with decision-making at times. He can dribble the ball, take too many touches at times. But he's an absolute beast. He commands that midfield like nobody else in Liverpool. Henderson, no, don't even get me started. They can both probably play together, but then it'll have to be both of them as the holding midfielder. Can does not lose defensive challenges. He will recover that ball no matter what. So I agree with you. I think he had a fabulous game. Liverpool were ruthless and Man City got exposed. And we were all waiting for this to happen. Now let's see how much this knocks the confidence of City. They have a lot of fixtures coming up. They have the return leg of the League Cup. They have FA Cup, and then Champions League starts. So it's probably not going to be what we thought. You know, City are going to win the title in March. But, you know, it'll be really interesting to see the next few weeks how they pan out.
That's interesting, man. I agree with you. And another thing that I want to talk about is we actually had, this is one of our predictions in the last episode about what we thought the result would be. And we actually put it up in our Facebook group. And I just want to give a few shout-outs to a few people who responded there. Sandy Lamba, who said that Liverpool's going to take this away with a 2-1 victory. And who also later posted about how City hasn't won at Anfield for almost 15 years now.
Yeah.
Was one of the firm believers. A shout-out to him. And the other one being Aditya Chetwani, our dear old friend, also a Liverpool supporter, said this would be a 3-2 for Liverpool. Close enough.
He was pretty close.
And a lot of people played for draws there, including you and a few other people. I obviously predicted a City win here. That being said, I've had a few conversations with people after this game where they were like, this particular result and the way the match played out was the way it was going to be. And that's something that I can't take, to be honest, right? No one expected this. No one at all expected this. And if you say that this was the expected scoreline or even the way the match played out, the number of goals that were scored, the way City was dominated, I'd like to see a fantasy team. Because for sure, you'd have a few game weeks where you scored maybe above 100 points, but you're probably sitting mid-table in all your leagues, right?
I don't think too many people expected the scoreline, even though it's meant to be Don Hutchinson on Premier League doing the shows. He's the pundit on Premier League. He predicted a 4-3 either way. He said, I'm not sure who's going to win, but it's going to be a 4-3 in my opinion.
That's so. A different match then, right? If it plays out that way. If he's thinking it's going to be a 4-3 either way, he thinks it's going to be a goal fest and like which team comes out on top is tough to say. But this wasn't a 4-3 like it sounds like on paper. Yeah. This was a Liverpool domination.
Yeah, it was.
So I've had a few arguments after that, man. So I just wanted to take a little time and address that on the show. Liverpool completely outclassed City here and no one expected that. No one expected them to do it the way they did it, is my point here. And props to Klopp and the entire team there.
I think it's a good template for teams that can actually execute it. 95% of teams can't execute it. But the likes of, well, United will never even try being that open under Jose. But the likes of, I think, Chelsea and Tottenham, possibly, especially Tottenham, because Poch plays a similar pressing game to Klopp, might... There might be different results in the reverse fixtures for against those two teams for Man City. Let's see.
So I guess now we know the formula to beat City. Just sell your best player before the match. Isn't it?
That was a cheap shot, but
make a lot of money and then you go
to hoots.
Yeah. I mean, they just sold Coutinho. Did it look at it? Imagine if this game would have had Coutinho in it.
This would have been a different result.
I agree, actually.
This would have been a different result. Liverpool would not have won this game with Coutinho because he does not provide solidity to midfield. As much as the creativity is there, against City, you needed pace. And you had pace in abundance with Mane and Salah. And then Firmino stitches everything together up front. So those three, occupying those three forward positions is really important. But if Coutinho came into midfield, Liverpool would have probably not been able to press as much as they did with the three midfielders that they played. So I don't think this would have been the same result. I think Liverpool might have actually ended up losing this game had Coutinho played.
That's a good point. Moving on to another game, which was also a goal fest. Tottenham ended up playing Everton. And, guess what happened there?
I didn't expect that. I mean, I kind of expected it. But then I thought it's Big Sam and he's just going to shut up shop and maybe lose by the odd goal. Because he loves doing that. He actually called out his players in the press conference after the game saying that they were not professional enough. I'm not a big fan of that, especially since this is like, what, your 10th game in charge or something like that? Your 12th game in charge? I think you should be protecting your players a little better. Yeah, fine, after the second goal went in, they just kind of lost interest. But then that's down to you and how tight a ship you run. Yeah, you haven't been there for too long. But if you managed to solidify them that much, then... maybe you should have just gone with the same game plan rather than let Kane, Son, Ali et al. Run riot, which is what they did.
And this is also after, ever since Big Sam's come, Everton had a decent string of results. It's not like they've been losing like this all the time. So to come out and say that about your players after a result like this is actually, it's very demoralizing for your team as well, right? I mean, let's see how they come back and hit it next week. But... Harry Kane, man, the guy can't just stop. He's now Tottenham's leading goal scorer in the Premier League. He just crossed Eddie Sheringham.
I would be shocked if he doesn't cross Shearer. I'd be shocked. And I think probably the only guy we can see doing that in the next two generations, three generations.
That's if he doesn't leave as well, right?
True. What if he goes to another Premiership club?
If he goes to
United, he's a typical he's a typical United player, you know. Homegrown,
that he is
expensive as hell.
But think about it this way too: if he goes, I would see him going outside England.
It has to be Real.
It has to be Real, right?
It has to be Real, or it's nobody else.
And it's the way Real's summer potential transfer signings are shaping up. The way Benzema's been off color, Ronaldo's been off color, and Perez just hinting that he's just going to splurge and splurge. I feel like if he goes, it'll be to Real.
Well, Real's talking up signing Neymar, Mbappe, Harry Kane.
It's like buying PSG.
Basically buying PSG. And if I were a player and I were given even 20% less wages and had the chance to play for Real as opposed to PSG, probably go, wouldn't I? Most successful club in the history of club competition.
And for someone like Kane, playing time is also not going to be an issue. He's obviously going to slot in as the first choice.
100%,
there.
Because they need to freshen up their squad big time.
Mm-hmm.
Benzema's, I think, pretty much done and dusted. Bale can never get off the treatment table. Ronaldo, at the moment, seems like he's past it. He could come back and prove us wrong, like he has umpteen number of times.
I think the issue with Ronaldo there is, regardless, just keeping his form aside, it can't be a factor. Obviously, he's such a great player. He can always kickstart that again. It's how unhappy he is at the way, I don't know what it is. I mean, there now talks about a Ronaldo-Neymar swap deal and him wanting to lower his buyout clause is 1 billion. I mean, who the hell's gonna pay that?
So he wants
Perez to lower his buyout clause to about 80 million, so that teams can actually buy
which
him.
Which is what he got sold for, and that was like the record transfer fee at that time. Anyway, no. I agree with you on the fact that he's not happy. He's not getting a new contract. I think the biggest problem is that he needs service to score. And he's not been getting that. Kroos and Modric have been really off color this season for some reason. I think they're just really jaded. Because both of them are first names for their countries as well. And the fact that they've been in so many competitions with Real, they won the Club World Cup, etc. So, and the World Cup is coming up in a few months. So I think it's going to be a pretty pivotal year for the likes of Real Madrid if they want to continue their domination of Europe. I think the Spanish cycle is slowly but surely coming to an end. I would love to be not proven wrong.
I mean, I don't know, man. I don't think it is, to be honest. It's if Perez does what he's already promised in the summer and they manage to set up a team which is akin to maybe a 2002 Real Madrid team, it's going to be a behemoth again, right? And it's just going to start that cycle of Real and or Barcelona's domination, because Barcelona will obviously have to counter Real spending and figure out a way to strengthen their team as well. So I don't know if this is Spanish, if we can go as far as saying the Spanish cycle is about to end, but it's definitely in an interesting position, especially where Real's positioned in their league table right now. There was an interesting joke I read on Twitter or something that Real's closer to the relegation than they are to Barcelona right now in the table. So shakeup is coming for sure.
Realize all this came from us talking about Kane, right?
That's
the man's
power.
We've actually run out of superlatives for that guy.
How many times can you say, oh, that guy scored 2 goals? Those 2 goals were sublime. It's just going to happen week after week, so we might as well just talk about...
You know, he shanked his second goal into the ground.
Yeah.
Still goes in.
Yeah, it's the...
I think nobody can teach you that. That cannot be taught.
Yeah, it's just the...
It's just your relationship with the universe. You are born to score goals.
Yeah.
Finished. End of story.
I just hope that... It's not just us who's waxing eloquence on the way he's playing, but it's the entire world. I just hope it doesn't rub off in the universe in the wrong way. And then next season, he just becomes a normal person again. Because I want to see this going on and on and on. I don't want this to be a Gareth Bale last season at Tottenham. Maybe flows over to a Gareth Bale first season and a half at Real. And then Gareth Bale being what he is at Real right now. I don't want that to happen.
Cannot happen, because he's, after Henry and Shearer, he's the person to score 20 goals plus in 4 consecutive seasons.
But Henry also went to Barcelona and became a different Henry. Shearer also.
No, he lost
left.
His pace and he wanted to win trophies, because obviously Dinosaur Wenger was past it as well. And Shearer, well... It was just love for Newcastle. And obviously he won the Premier League with Blackburn. After that, he went to Newcastle.
Speaking about Dinosaur Wenger, if you say he was past it then, what is he doing right now?
I don't even know. I have
ego,
comments on everything, but...
The ego is so big. It's so massive that the man won't start Sanchez.
No. That's a point I'm not in agreement with. I don't think it's an ego thing. I think... Arsene Wenger is Arsenal, okay? And Arsenal is Arsene Wenger at the moment. And that is where the problem lies.
Sucks for Arsenal, doesn't it?
Sucks for Arsenal for sure, because Wenger is now Dinosaur Wenger. When he came, he was the most sort of dominant species in the Premier League. He came with fancy sports scientists and psychology and nutrition and technical training and rondos and, you know, getting physical strong players to play technically and then just gelling that into a monster unit that the Invincibles became. But when he started moving away from that and wanted to get into tiki-taka, which Barcelona propagated for the best part of 2 decades, that's where it started going wrong. Because you cannot win the Premier League with just tiki-taka players. Like Man City, they're doing it, but they still have strong players to back it up. They have the likes of KDB, who's not weak, by the way. He's technically very good, but he's very strong as well, physically. You have Fernandinho, you have Gundogan, who's very strong. And then Walker, Stones, Otamendi. Obviously, maybe Stones not after that Firmino goal. But you get the picture, right? And Arsene Wenger completely wanted to move away from that. And after that, it's just been going downhill. He's the manager. He manages everything. In this day and age, it's not possible. He's getting old. The workload is too much. And that's why this contract situation of Ozil, Sanchez, and Wilshere as well, mind you, who's their third best player at the moment, might end up leaving for free in 6 months. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, Sanchez, we know for a fact, won't. He's probably leaving. And by the time this episode's out, he'll probably be a Manchester United player. I think it's like 99% done. But
what a mercenary, huh? What a mercenary. You know, I read somewhere that if he gets his wages pre-tax, he earns £70,000 a day. A day.
I mean, that talking about money in football right now, it's ludicrous. There's no logic to it. So I'm not even surprised about anything that happens anymore. I just want to come back to the point about Wenger not starting Sanchez.
Can you just tell the good public what the actual result was and how it came about?
They're 1-0 up against Bournemouth and they lost the game 2-1. Sanchez is not even on the bench. He's not listed on the squad. Ozil is listed as having a hamstring injury, so he's not playing. Fine, whatever. Sanchez is not listed as having anything. It's very clear that because of the transfer talks and because of all of that, I mean, Wenger's like, oh, I want to have my squad adapted to him, life without him, yada, yada, yada. You're going to replace him, right? There are talks about Aubameyang coming in. There are talks about Mkhitaryan coming the opposite way from Man United. You cannot not play your best player.
I disagree. I've heard and read a lot that he's a bad egg. He has been a bad egg in the dressing room for the best part of a season and a half now.
Is it worth a loss? Is my question.
No, but
The past 3 times Wenger did not start Sanchez or even have him on the squad, they lost a game. The past 3 games they've lost is because Sanchez wasn't in the squad. Is it worth a loss? At this point in the season, you're battling whether you play Champions League next season. You're not winning Europa League. No chance. You're battling whether you play Champions League next season or not. You don't play your best player regardless of him leaving or not. Is it worth a loss? Is it worth the drop 3 points or not? According to me, it's not. You play what you have.
They're not getting into Champions League, FYI.
Obviously not. Not now.
That's 5 teams battling for
The only thing Arsene Wenger, I'll give props to him for, is his ability to wiggle into the top four in the second half of the season. He does something or the other. And that was the only thing that was there. And I feel it's gone now because look at the other teams battling. I mean, there's no chance Arsenal's going to finish again. And if he doesn't finish in the top four, I think his contract runs out at the end of this season.
But he can renew it because he...
If he renews it, then, I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know if he renews it. I don't know how Arsenal fans are going to feel, let alone like not fans who of other football teams and just football in general. But if he goes and leaves Arsenal the way he did, it's going to ruin his legacy, right?
I feel for Arsenal fans. I really do feel for them. I think the legacy would have been ruined a long time back had he not won those 3 FA Cups out of 4.
And he's out now.
And he's out of the FA Cup. He's probably going to lose the League Cup as well. They have a semi-final, second leg coming up against Chelsea, and then most likely Man City in the final, who no chance. His legacy, well, what do I say? I think, you know, after when those 2 goals went in at the Vitality, I think most Arsenal fans would have felt like something punched their gut as hard as it could. Like, it must have felt so bad. I really feel for them. He has to go. There is no way he can stick around for another season unless he wins his standard trophy, which is getting into the top four. And if Oba and Mkhitaryan come and maybe they start gelling ASAP because they played together as well at Dortmund. They're a pretty phenomenal partnership there. And he stops playing Iwobi, who was, by the way, supposed to be disciplined for partying till 3 a.m. The night before a game. Yeah. He started the next game, I believe.
I mean, yes.
He's been in the squad. He's playing.
Yeah.
And he's rubbish at the moment.
He's their best bet, man. If you don't make Sanchez play, who else is going to play? And okay, talking about this, I have a question for you. If Mick and Aubameyang actually end up coming, do you think Ozil's going to stay?
I think Ozil likes being a big fish in a small pond, which is definitely what Arsenal are right now. Arsenal fans, you can hate on me, no problem. I think he likes doing that. He likes being the big fish in the small pond. He likes, you know, being the maestro, the dictator of the orchestra, so to speak, the playmaker. I think he might stick around. I think he might sign a new contract, especially now that Sanchez is going, the wage bill becomes a little easier, not so much pressure. They're just going to give him a huge chunk of money and be like, you know what, listen, we're getting Oba, we're going to get Mkhitaryan. It's probably going to be the 3-4-3 again, except the only difference is
talks about Malcolm as well from Bordeaux.
Talks about Malcolm, who Liverpool are in for as well, apparently. And I'm fairly certain he'd want to go to Liverpool as opposed to Arsenal. Current state of affairs, of course. It's a very strange one to call. By the time this episode airs, we might know, we'll probably definitely know a lot more about Sanchez and Mkhitaryan's future. Maybe Aubameyang and maybe Malcolm. Maybe. Let's see.
Yeah, let's see how that pans out. I'm all up for Wenger, because Wenger leaving will also leave a void in Arsenal, just like Fergie leaving did in Man United. And Arsenal will need a couple of seasons to stabilize themselves again. And the sooner they start doing that, the better, rather than leaving it for as late as possible. Wenger is definitely not going out with a bang, just like Fergie did. He's going to go out in a position similar to this, because teams and the competition in the Premier League is going to get tougher and tougher as seasons go on. It's hands down the toughest league to compete in currently, and it will be for the next few years. So I don't know, man. Let's see how it all pans out. Arsenal fans, stay strong, I guess. That's all I can say for you.
Yeah, it's like we're wishing them, you know, get well soon.
It's like they're going to war or something. I'd be like, yeah,
something
come back,
like
guys.
Some tragedies happened. Anyway, I think let's just move on. It's a depressing topic. I think, you know, we should just talk about the team where Sanchez is headed next, which
number,
is United.
Number two, a solid 3-point grasp on the number two position, Manchester United. They played Stoke and won pretty comfortably, had a good game, 3-0, clean sheet, Lukaku scored. Pogba had a really good assist, with Martial scoring a really, really beautiful goal.
Pogba had two assists. He bossed that game as well.
Oh yeah, he had two assists, you're correct. So, comfortable win there. I think Sanchez coming in could help. I think he'll obviously take the Rashford / Martial spot in the left there.
100% is going to help, because he's going to inject a lot of quality that's been missing on that left side, because he gets you goals and he gets you assists. And just his style of playing, you know, if he's in a happy environment, you're paying him £70,000 a day. He better perform. He better bloody perform.
That's true, man. And I think Jose has the right skills to sort of get that out of him, at least for a season. That's what we've seen with Jose. The second season with a new player, you never really know what the relationship becomes. So it's almost a done deal, I would say. Even Arsene Wenger has come out with a statement saying it's almost a done deal. So he wouldn't say that if it wasn't otherwise. So maybe next United game, we see Sanchez in the left spot for those guys. That'll be interesting to see. Their win against Stoke was obviously very comfortable. Table as it stands right now is United on second, 12 points behind City on 50. And Liverpool and Chelsea both on 47, but Liverpool ahead on goal difference by one. Liverpool's goal difference is 26 and Chelsea's is 25. The way Chelsea's been playing, I expect that goal difference, well, it completely depends on their defense, but offensively, they won't be adding too much to that. Liverpool, obviously, is the other way around. They're on 54 goals a very leaky defense with 28 against. So let's see how that pans out. Tottenham's 3 points behind these guys on 44. And then we have Arsenal on 6th at 39. I don't know, man. Let's see how the Jan transfer window pans out. If Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan come in, if Malcolm comes in, what effect they have on the team. But I think it's earlier it was between Chelsea and United. All of a sudden it's between Liverpool, Chelsea and United. And I think as we move forward, it will be between Liverpool and United for that second spot.
Well, that's nice to hear from a pseudo Chelsea fan. Before we come to Chelsea, because I want to talk about them. I think this, if Arsenal are not careful and if Oba and Mkhitaryan come in, and provided they come in, don't hit the ground running, I think this could pretty soon in the next year or 2 years become a top five without Arsenal in it.
Interesting.
Like Liverpool was for a good part of the decade not finishing in the Champions League spots. Anyway, best of luck, Arsenal fans. Coming back to Chelsea, Chelsea can't buy a win. They can't buy goals. They can't buy a win. They couldn't beat Norwich in 3.5 hours of football. That's 90 minutes at Carrow Road, 120 minutes at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. I think it has three consecutive draws, if I'm not mistaken, two of them against Arsenal. And
No, that's four draws now.
Oh, that's four draws now.
Yeah, with three nil-nils.
Three nil-nils.
And then 1-1. And then, yeah, they can talk about VAR. Conte can moan about VAR. The quality is just lacking for some reason. There's no freedom for Chelsea to play at all. Yeah, balance is important and having a good defense is important. But when your right-sided centre-back is giving most of the assists to your striker who can pretty much only score headed goals and you don't trust your backup striker and then there's nobody else to play striker, there are issues. Definitely, there are issues.
I completely agree, man. And I don't want to talk about this anymore because I feel like I do it almost every podcast, every episode. Morata needs something. He needs something to kickstart his whatever form or whatever he hit. I mean, I saw him as a super sub in Juve and Real all throughout. So I was following his career pretty closely. So I was a little skeptical when he came to Chelsea in terms of him being first choice striker, him being, well, now pretty much the only choice because Batshuayi and Conte, I don't know Batshuayi what he did, but Conte really does not like him.
Scored a goal though.
He did score a goal. So but
pretty good, good movement, good finish.
Doesn't count for Conte, dude. Doesn't count.
I don't know, man. He didn't even celebrate. He looked really sullen on the touchline. Everybody else on the bench was celebrating and Conte just
he was
probably
upset that he scored because now he has like more
less ammo against him.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. Murata just one-on-one with a ball trying to take on a defender or a goalkeeper, he does not look like a complete striker at all right now. And Chelsea, I'm not even sure if they're in the market for a second striker, but they need to be. They need to give him some competition. Maybe that'll bolster his performances. Hazard can only do so much, right? He can't help you win every game. And after a while, it becomes a mentality issue for the player as well. So he stops playing as hard. He stops. It might seem that he's not performing as well, but he's putting in the effort. And
there are talks of him not wanting to sign a new contract as well, by the way, or saying that I'm only going to sign after Courtois signs. And Courtois said, you know, I'm going to listen to Real. And Hazard has indicated the same thing. So Chelsea might be in trouble, man.
You can't blame them, right? You can't blame them because
two of the best players going to Real, that's going to be hard to replace both of them.
And then it'll all just come down on Aspilicueta and he'll be the only person who will be running. And Kante, obviously. They have a great squad. If you look at their squad and the individual players in the slots, they have a great, great squad, right? And Kante is obviously a great coach, but you need backups. There's a reason Aguero and Jesus are playing so well, right? Because each is a backup for the other.
And they can play together.
And they can play together as well. And they're playing well. So the backup is always thinking about that too. Because when they come out on the pitch, they come out with an extra fire in them.
Competition with places is the most important thing in a squad.
Murata doesn't have that. Think about it. Murata knows there's no chance Batshuayi is going to play. If a player knows that his backup is not going to play, I mean, that's an added reason for him not to perform as well. So Chelsea needs, I feel like they should, even though Murata's their record signing, they're Chelsea and they can afford players. So I feel like they should just go out and buy a out-and-out striker, even if that's at the cost of Murata losing his place. So that about wraps up this week's episode of TFC. Hit us up on our Facebook group, The Football Corner, for your thoughts about this episode. And we'll also be putting up a few questions that we'd like to ask you guys and hear your thoughts on as well.
You can also reach us on Twitter at Football Babas. That's Football Babas, B-A-B-A-S.
Or over email at tfc@munchermedia.com. Our theme music is provided by Kevin McLeod. You can check out his stuff at incompetech.com in our show notes.
This has been a Muncher Media production. See you guys next week.
Bye-bye.